Hey, what's up, you guys? I'm Haley.
And I'm Andrea.
And you're listening to Inhuman, a true crime podcast. Okay, today we are going to be covering another suggested case. This suggestion was sent in by Nicole. So thank you so much, Nicole, for the suggestion. And I think we'll just get into it.
Yeah.
Today we are covering the case of Tara Lynn Grant. So Tara Lynn was born in June 1972, and she grew up in Michigan with her parents and her sister, Alicia. Tara studied business at Michigan State University, which I kind of have to just mention that I dislike Michigan State because I am a Boilermaker, but it's
fine. Are they rivals?
It's fine. Yeah, they're both in the Big Ten. Michigan State is very good at basketball, and if you guys didn't know, I'm a huge Purdue basketball fan, so I just gotta put that in there. But she studied business there, and she graduated and started working for Washington Group International, which, according to their Wikipedia, is a company that provides integrated engineering, construction, and management services to businesses and governments.
Okay.
So they were headquartered in Boise, Idaho, but she was working in WGI's downtown Detroit office. And she traveled often for her job, but she was very successful and began moving up the company very quickly.
Nice.
And her job was the main source of income for her family. So in 2007, Tara was 34 years old and married to Stephen Grant. And together they had two young children, a six-year-old girl and a four-year-old boy. Stephen worked at a tool and die shop and also was basically a stay-at-home dad, cared for the children daily. But the family also had a 19-year-old au pair from Germany named Verena Dierks. So he was doing some work outside of the home while the au pair would take care of the kids at times. But okay. He was also, he kind of dubbed himself Mr. Mom. He coached soccer and took the kids places. And, you know, he did a lot like that, while Tara was more of the working parent and was very, very successful in her job.
The breadwinner, if you will.
To outsiders, their family seemed completely normal. But what her friends and the community didn't know was that she was being verbally abused and manipulated by her husband at home.
Oh, no.
On February 14th, 2007, the Macomb County Sheriff's Office, County Sheriff's Office, received a phone call from Stephen Grant, reporting his wife, Tara Lynn Grant, missing.
Oh, no.
He said that she had been missing for 5 days.
5 days? What? And right. He's just reporting you're missing?
But he said that while she hadn't been seen for several days, it wasn't the first time that Tara had left home. She traveled a lot for work, and the two had gotten into an argument the night before she disappeared. So it wasn't super weird that she wasn't, like, responding to him.
Okay.
So he told police that on the evening of February 9th, he overheard Tara talking on the phone with someone after they got into an argument and she decided that she was going to leave a day early for her next business trip. So then a car pulled up not long after she packed for this business trip, and she met somebody at the end of the driveway, got into a dark-colored car that drove off, taking Tara away. Mm-hmm. So after she was reported missing, the search for Tara began immediately. They began searching in nearby areas. They questioned Stephen, of course, natural first step in cases like this. At first, he was cooperative, but it was very short-lived. According to police, Stephen was less than cooperative during the early investigation, initially refusing to answer any specific questions. He also was asked to take a polygraph test, and he said that he wouldn't take one by the police, and they later learned that he took a private polygraph test and it came back inconclusive.
Okay.
We say this every time. Polygraph tests are not good.
Unreliable.
But just want to throw that in there.
Yeah.
While he made numerous media appearances over the next 2 weeks, Stephen began accusing authorities of harassment. So on February 15th, just the day after he reported Tara missing, Stephen was pulled over and arrested for driving with a suspended license. And after this, he accused police of using that traffic stop and arrest as an excuse to bring him into custody and question him more about Tara's disappearance. Which, like, okay, yes, maybe, but... Dude, your wife is missing.
Exactly. It's always wild to me how people are so, like, unwilling to help if they're innocent. Like, why would you not want your wife, your loved one, your family member, whoever, to be found? Makes no sense.
Exactly. Another suspect investigators looked into for being involved in Tara's disappearance was the au pair, Verena. They were actually able to determine that Verena and Stephen had been having a... somewhat of an affair. Depending on the source, some say it was a sexual affair where they were actually doing things. Some say it was just kind of like a flirtatious affair, but something was going on between the two that had begun about 4 to 6 weeks before Tara disappeared.
Ew. And how old was she? 19.
However, Verena had a solid alibi. She was out with friends the night Tara disappeared, so she was no longer a suspect. And police were definitely suspicious of Stephen.
Mm-hmm.
They continued searching for Tara Lynn in Washington Township, Michigan. They were looking for any sign of her or any clues as to where she may have gone. And during this, Stephen was continually doing daily press conferences, crying, speaking with media, begging for Tara to come home. And he was very into speaking with the media. So specifically, he called local 4 consumer expert Hank Winchester at one point up to 20 times a day.
What?
Yeah. Hank said that he kind of noticed that Stephen was becoming obsessed with trying to control the media message.
Yeah.
Hank reports Stephen asking questions like, how did I look on TV? Would it be weird if I got my hair cut? Is it okay if I go shopping?
Okay, guy. What are you doing? You're seeming very suspicious.
Mm-hmm. On March 2nd, 2007, about 2 weeks after Tara disappeared, Stephen was desperately trying to get Hank to come to his house, specifically asking to be interviewed in the family's garage. So that afternoon, Hank and his team were pulling up to the house to interview Stephen, when they learned that the police were about to begin searching the home. So that day, the police had executed a search warrant, or had gotten a search warrant to execute on the family's home. So they had previously searched the home when Tara first went missing, and I think that was just like Stephen allowed them to search the home, but they wanted to do another more in-depth search. So they got this search warrant after they found a bag containing blood and metal shavings at a wooded area in a park near the Grants' home. So they had previously searched this park and found nothing, but this time the bag that they found led them to become suspicious of Stephen even further since he worked part-time at a machine shop. So with that was enough evidence for them to get a search warrant, and they executed that search warrant on the Grants' home. During that search, they found a tote in the garage that was not present during their first search of the home. When they opened the tote, there was a plastic garbage bag inside, and when they ripped open the bag, they found the dismembered but fully clothed torso of Tara Lynn.
Just her torso?
Mm-hmm. So it was from her neck to the top of her thighs. She had on a bra, underwear, and... trousers that were cut off where her legs were cut off.
Oh my god.
And with that, they knew why Stephen had been so uncooperative.
Ew. Because
he had killed Tara.
No, what the he didn't just kill her. That is overkill. I'm sorry. Mm-hmm. That is disgusting. Appalling.
Yeah. Yeah. So they finally had found Tara, and they figured out what happened, but Stephen had fled. So when they executed the search warrant, he asked if they could take the family's dog for a walk, and he was allowed to because he wasn't being arrested or detained or anything at the time.
Yeah.
So he left the home and he fled. After this, they also found more evidence at the machine shop that Stephen worked at, which included hair, blood, and pieces of Tara's flesh.
He dismembered her at his place of business? His job?
Mm-hmm.
What the fuck?
And I didn't write this down, but I believe it was his father's shop. I could be wrong on that, but I think it was his father's shop, so he probably had a little more, like, autonomy to go there, maybe right. on off hours and stuff like that.
Where were the kids?
I don't know. They were with family or with the au pair.
Okay.
Why can't I say that word? Au pair.
Because it's A-U, so it sounds like aw.
Aw, but it's au pair. Yeah.
Some people say au pair. Just depends right. on where you're from, I'm just guess. Fancy.
But yeah, the kids thankfully were not there when this happened.
Oh my God.
So the police knew that Stephen was responsible, but they did not know where he was. But thankfully, just 2 days later, police were able to track a cell phone call that Stephen had made to his sister. They tracked him to Michigan's Wilderness State Park, over 225 miles away from his home. They found that Stephen had taken a liquor bottle and pill bottles from his sister's home, intending to commit suicide. After driving to the park, he spent the night in the freezing cold with no outer clothing on him for protection from the elements, but he was still alive when they found him.
Good.
Police immediately arrested him, and he was airlifted to the Northern Michigan Hospital to be treated for extreme hypothermia and exposure. And at that hospital was when Stephen Grant confessed in a ton of detail.
Of course he did.
Yep. I'm going to share a lot of it here, but not all of it. But just a warning, this will be not fun to listen to.
Graphic?
Yeah.
Okay.
So Stephen said, on the night of February 9th, Tara had just returned home from a business trip that she had been on to Puerto Rico. The two had gotten into an argument because Stephen was accusing her of spending too much time with one of her male coworkers. In the heat of the argument, Stephen claimed that Tara slapped him and he kind of like hit/pushed her back, leaving her to fall over and bang her head on the floor. According to Stephen, Tara then got up and told him that was the last straw, that she was going to take the kids and leave, and started packing a bag, and that's when Stephen snapped.
Oh no.
He strangled her for 4 minutes.
Wow.
I wish you guys could see Andrea's face right now. Yeah. He said that while he was doing this, Tara was like trying to fight back and looking into his eyes. So he took a piece of clothing and put it over her head so he didn't have to look at her.
Ew.
Once she was no longer breathing, he wrapped his belt around her neck and used it to pull her down the stairs with their two kids asleep in their bedrooms.
That is... wow.
Mm-hmm. He then put her body into the back of his SUV, and he described this as sounding like a watermelon hitting the ground when her head hit the ground.
And she was already deceased at this point?
Yeah, oh, she was dead.
Oy.
Then the au pair, Verena, returned home, and he told her a sob story of Tara leaving him after an argument and that she had gotten into a car that had taken her away. And that's when he began calling Tara's phone and, like, leaving messages to create his cover-up.
Okay, Chris Watts. Like,
Yeah. Disgusting. No, I know.
Disgusting.
I know. The next day, Stephen took Tara's body to his father's... Oh, it was his father's. I did write it down. So it was his father's machine, tool and die shop.
Okay.
So he took Tara's body there, and he began to dismember her.
Oh, why? Why?
To get rid of her. So he then took her remains to the nearby Stony Creek Metro Park and disposed of her body parts there, burying them in various parts of the woods. However, after he reported her missing, he learned that the police had planned to search the park for Tara. So Stephen returned and recovered her dismembered torso. I'm not 100% sure why he just recovered the torso. I don't know if it was just because that was the biggest part and he wasn't able to properly hide it or conceal it. So he was like, okay, I need to get this out of here because the other body parts will be harder to find. It's not really clear, but that's the only part that he retrieved.
He's a dipshit and forgot where he buried the rest of the...
That too.
Yeah.
So he brought her torso back to the family's garage and hid it in that tote.
Oh my God.
So he basically knew that as soon as the police came with a search warrant that he was going to be caught. He knew that they were going to find the tote. So that's why he was like, I'm going to go walk the dog, and fled. He knew that he had been caught.
Yeah.
So Stephen had confessed, was arrested, recovered from hypothermia, and this is when he was officially charged with first-degree murder, meaning he was facing life in prison. The trial lasted several weeks, and unfortunately, the jury in the case could not come to a unanimous decision about the premeditation of the crime. So in December 2007, Stephen Grant was found guilty of second-degree murder and was sentenced to 50 to 80 years in prison. Now, this is so frustrating, but I also understand it because first-degree murder has to be premeditated.
Yeah.
You planned it. And from the confession and the story and the evidence, it doesn't really seem like he had planned to murder her.
Like he snapped.
But at the same time...
Yeah.
Yeah, but at the same time, as soon as he started strangling her, he could have stopped and he decided, no, I'm going to continue murdering her.
Right.
So... very frustrating, and because of that second-degree murder charge, he did not get life in prison. He got just 50 to 80 years.
Which, if he was to serve the lesser part of that, he would probably still be alive and get to be free.
Yeah, because he was, like, in his 30s,
yeah.
So he would be in his 80s. He was also convicted of mutilation of a corpse and was sentenced to an additional 6 to 10 years that would be served concurrently. At his sentencing, the judge called Stephen's actions, quote, demonic, barbaric, and dishonest.
Yeah, he's hit the nail on the head there.
Yeah.
Like, that's your children's mother.
Yeah. And somebody you've been with for years and that you supposedly love.
Yeah, and you're going to get caught. Like, you're not a genius, you know?
No. No, he was an idiot.
And then your kids don't have a parent. They have no parents.
Yeah. So Stephen appealed his conviction several times, but on March 30th, 2010, he lost his final appeal with the state court.
Good.
After that, he tried to claim that his trial was unduly prejudiced because of the pretrial publicity, but the Michigan Supreme Court ruled that to not be true. Stephen Grant then tried to claim that the police had improperly obtained his confession while he was being treated in the hospital, but the U.S. District Court... Judge David Lawson denied his petition.
Good.
Judge Lawson said, quote, officials in Macomb County took extraordinary measure to ensure that a fair and impartial jury was seated, and basically that it was a fair trial.
Yeah. You murdered someone. Like, no.
Yeah.
You're not getting away.
No. Today, Stephen is being held at the Bellamy Creek Correctional Facility in Ionia, Michigan, and his earliest release date is 2057. Not only did Tara's family suffer from Stephen's crime, but his family did as well. His father, William Allen Grant, ended up committing suicide in June 2008.
Oh no, his dad, no.
A man who worked in a neighboring tool shop said that William Grant never seemed to recover from the actions of his son that basically led to the destruction of his family. I mean, He ran this machine shop in town, and now not only did his son dismember his wife's body at that shop, but, like, the name Grant was tarnished.
Yeah. I mean, I would never want to hire them for anything.
Yeah, exactly.
Even though he's innocent.
Yeah. So, unfortunately, he ended up taking his life about a year later.
Oh, that makes me so mad.
Yeah. After their mother's murder and father's conviction, Tara's two young children were taken in by her sister, Alicia Standifer, who is now raising them with her husband in their home in Ohio. So their aunt and uncle helped them navigate the unthinkable, and today the two have turned the tragedy of their mother's murder into an opportunity to bring awareness for domestic violence. Lindsay, who is now 21, and Ian, who is now 19, return every year to Macomb County for Tara's Walk, which is a 5K event that they created to honor their mother and to raise money for domestic abuse programs. Last October at the walk, Ian said, quote, "If I can change just one person's life, that would make all of this totally worthwhile." Worthwhile. I don't know why I added a D to that. Today, Lindsay is studying psychology at The Ohio State University, and she is focused on working in pediatric psychology because she remembered how much psychologists she worked with after her mom's murder helped her.
Wow.
So she wants to help children who have dealt with traumatic events in their own lives.
That's amazing to take something like that and turn it into a positive.
Yeah. She said, quote, "Therapists helped me find coping mechanisms and ways to channel how I was feeling. That's the reason I'm super into art now, because I had a therapist who was like, you already like to draw, so draw how you're feeling. And I still do that to this day." And that's exactly what she wants to do for children in the future. Lindsay also said that she has no desire to speak to her biological father. She says that she was able to create closure for herself without needing to speak to him. She said at first she felt like she needed to speak to him to get that closure, but she was able to create that for herself. So she said that if she ever does choose to talk to him, it will be because she wants to, not because she feels like she has to.
No, she absolutely doesn't have to.
Yeah.
She owes him nothing. He took her mother from her.
Yep. Ian is now in college in Wisconsin and is working with his sister to bring awareness to domestic violence situations that so many are trapped in. He said, quote, "I like to spread the word to pretty much end domestic violence because I've been through that situation and I'm just trying to make sure nobody else has to go through that again." Mm-hmm. He also has no desire to see or speak with his biological father. And while this is a tragic, heartbreaking case, I think it's important to follow after her kids and use Tara Lynn Grant's memory to bring awareness to domestic violence situations. Domestic abuse is not always physical on a daily basis, but it can play out like this. Tara was such a quote-unquote normal woman. She was an upper middle class businesswoman with a husband and two kids, and to the outside, it seemed like a totally normal family. But you never know what happens behind closed doors. Verbal abuse, manipulation is real, and that's why it's so important to share her story. That's what Tara's legacy is. She's inspired hundreds of domestic violence victims to find safety and have resources to do that. At the 10th anniversary of Tara's death in 2017, Lindsay said, quote, "My mom would be really proud of what's going on. She would not want her death to be unimportant. She would want people to understand that situations do happen, and it unfortunately takes one person to lose their life for other people to get the courage to understand."
That's so true.
And I think that that is incredibly moving. And that's why I wanted to share this story today, because it's so heartbreaking. And it's not a case of somebody who was being physically abused constantly and, you know, going to the hospital for black eyes or broken arms, yeah, or anything like that. You know, and I think some of her family members did have some idea what was going on, but they weren't able to get her the help that she needed in time. And I think that it's so important to spread stories like this, because not only is her family now doing so much to help victims of domestic violence, but they're just, by bringing awareness to it, people might hear this story and say, okay, I need to get to safety for myself and my kids. And this was the push that I needed. So that's why I wanted to share this story today.
Unfortunately, domestic violence almost always escalates. Obviously, this is an extreme case of that, but, you know, especially when children are involved, like, if you're experiencing this, and we will put resources in the show notes for sure, but
yes,
get out. Just get out. There are so many resources out there for you, places that will find you a home, places that will find you temporary assistance with food and money and whatever. Like, there are so many different resources out there. Just get out.
Yeah. And going along with that, if you or anyone you know needs support, the National Domestic Violence Hotline is 800-799-7233. You can also visit thehotline.org. They have ways for you to conceal it and exit out really quickly. If somebody were to come up and see where you were, you can chat with them, you can call them, anything. And they have tons of resources to help you get the help to be able to get out and be safe. The 15th annual Tara's Walk is happening on Saturday, September 24th, 2022 in Sterling Heights, Michigan. So if you're in the area, I'd love for you to go support the cause. You can go yourself. You can bring a team. I'll put all the info in the show notes. If I lived in that area, I would 1,000% be there. I know we have listeners all across the country. So if you're in Michigan, go check it out. See if you can attend and support Tara and her family with all the work that they're doing. But that is the case of Tara Lynn Grant. She is making an impact to this day. And as her daughter said, her death is not unimportant.
Yeah.
Rest in peace, Tara. And your family is doing incredible things. I'll put all of that information in the show notes. Donate if you can, share if you can, anything. They're really doing important work. But that's all I have for you guys today. Thank you so much for listening. We appreciate it as always. We'll see you soon with a new episode. And until then, keep it human.
Bye, guys.